This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
They haven't fixed the screens. They keep blinking on and off.
They're still blinking on and off.
They're still not fixed. You said you'd do it in 5 minutes and you haven't done it in a week. If that was the last one we recorded.
It was, yeah.
It's difficult to know these days, isn't it? Hello, my name's Nick Helm.
And my name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Nick.
And Nathaniel Metcalf.
Always do the same. Always do the same name. You're listening to Nick and Nathaniel
Metcalf.
Fan Club. You're listening live to FUBAR Radio.
You're listening live, but we are not live.
This is a pre-record.
If in your life, it is happening right now.
But that could be Friday. What's the Friday this Friday?
Friday will be the 12th.
One day away. To Saturday the 13th.
Yep.
I always thought that would be a funny idea for a film. Saturday the 14th.
Didn't they do it?
And then you look it up and they have done it. But
right,
Saturday
yeah.
the 14th, loads of people just clearing up all these bodies after a slasher movie. They didn't do that. There was a really weird one with Joe Don Baker in it. And it was really weird. I can't remember what it was called. They're not even listening in the other room. Joe Don Baker, he did like a slasher spoof. I bought it and it was really weird. It was kind of like early 80s. It was sort of like an Airplane kind of take on the slasher genre.
Really?
But it wasn't, because the slasher genre hadn't been...
It was still too new and a bit not really established what the rules were.
It hadn't ran itself into the ground by that point. But you know, you go Halloween, Friday the 13th, April Fool's Day, Mother's Day, and Diwali. You know, they kind of like run out of holidays. My Bloody Valentine's, but they're never kind of like the thing that you think it's going to be. Anyway, so it was a play on some sort of holiday, I think, but the jokes were really weird. Like, there was just a whole storyline where the dad was fucking his daughter.
Oh.
It was horrible. Like, the tone of it was just like...
We're going to do, like, an Airplane-type movie about horror movies, but with incest.
It was just really, like, it was unpleasant. And also, I don't know if it was the quality of the version I saw, of the DVD that I saw, but it felt like it was, you know, filmed on tape. It just felt really, like, low quality.
Do you ever see those clip shows of things where they'll be, like, you know, they used to be famous or something, and they'll have a clip of, like, an advert from about 10 years ago, and it will look appalling, and you go, I mean, what have you sourced for this? It's like they just always... Well, it always feels like they go, like, you must have a better copy of this. It's like they get all their things, like, they go, we need a clip from... I'm Alan Partridge. Yeah, should we buy like the DVD or something?
Right.
No. Just, I think I've got it on tape somewhere from the time. Yeah, I think I've got it.
Matt LeBlanc used to be in a ketchup advert, and then they show you like a ketchup.
It's like degraded thing, and you go, like, you go, I mean, why
are there fuzzy lines going through it? I mean, you can't tell what the fuck's going on.
It's from 1990.
Well, I don't think that they give Heinz ketchup adverts the George Lucas treatment.
but you'd think, just the idea that even if you played them off of VHS, you'd go, I mean, it still looks better than that. I don't know, like, where you found it.
Anyway, you're listening to Fan Club.
Yeah, this is
first rule of Fan Club.
tell your friends.
Second rule of Fan Club is please, for the love of God, tell your friends. And third rule, it's worth stating, tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Fourth rule, tell your friends. Fifth, tell your friends. Sixth, tell your friends. I've got OCD. What's the cleanest rock band? OCDC.
Yes.
I don't think I made that up. I've gone all Keith Jegwin on the air.
but he doesn't ever say that at the end.
No, he never says that.
He says, I made that up.
I don't
know. He's dead, isn't he now? Dead.
Dead.
Poor old Keith.
Which just goes to show.
Silly old Keith.
You can't outrun The Reaper. When do you think you're going to die? Oh, fucking hell. Oh, it's coming. So, keep it light. So, well, what better way to celebrate all our mortality than talking absolute shit about stuff no one gives a fuck about?
Sure, I think if anything, that should be that is mortality. Yeah, that is what we do.
That is the strapline, isn't it?
Watch, talk nonsense about things that don't really matter to distract us from death.
Counting down our lives, one episode of Bargain Hunt at a time.
So, I do think that sometimes. Sometimes I go, like, when I realise what I'm... this week, I mean, it's what I would do anyway, to be fair. But, you know, I've really sought out a 1969/1970 a sketch show of Bernard Cribbins called Cribbins.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm enjoying it. It's a bit sexist, occasionally racist. and the sketches go from... that's pretty good, too. I don't even really understand this. but I'm watching two series of this, and, you know... but at the same time, I do, you know... some people come up with a cure for cancer and things, don't they? They do, like, and you think, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, but you know how many people on the planet right now are watching Cribbins?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm unique.
No one, it's just you.
Great songs, isn't it? Absolute belters.
You're a massive fan of Cribbo, aren't
you? Oh, I love it. I love it.
So has this show sort of made you love him more? Or maybe made you love him less?
No, it hasn't really made me love him less. So everything's very in context. So it's all very... everything's very much of the period.
Yeah.
And some of the sketches are pretty good. Some are like... what they often do, the sketches have a real sense of outstaying their welcome, I'd say, where you go, okay, I get it. And it just carries on for like another 6 minutes or something. It's that one where you go, yeah. Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And they just keep going. But I do like him. I think he is brilliant. I think he's got such a... I think he exudes... He's like charisma plus, I think. He exudes something where you go, God, I like this guy. Ooh. He seems like... he gives off... He's very warm.
What's he most famous for? Is it Railway Children?
Railway Children, probably, yeah.
He was in Carry On Jack, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's in a couple of the Carry Ons, isn't he?
Is Carry On Spying?
Yes, he's definitely in that one.
And what else? He's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because I was thinking the other day, we were thinking about, like, who would you... if you were to make, like, a horror film, like a Tim Burton-type horror film where you needed a Christopher Lee cameo, who would you pick?
Oh, yeah, we were saying that. Who would be, like, the horror... star,
and I just think the only one around now is like Max von Sydow.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
He would be perfect for it. You'd go, yeah, brilliant. We need like an iconic horror icon. he popped in my head in the week. But like, not Bernard Cribbins.
No, that was a horror.
He's just old.
We need someone.
We need someone that evokes the. The horror days of the horror movies of yore. So we've just got this old man. Because what's more chilling than being reminded of...
I think he's too reassuring. He did turn up and go, oh, it's all right.
Didn't he make something recently?
He was in Doctor Who.
No, it wouldn't be that.
He was in... has he been in stuff recently? No, I don't. Not that I can see.
I remember seeing an old Bernard Cribbins on a poster for something.
Oh, maybe.
It's like when Richard Briers popped up in Cockneys versus Zombies. I never saw it, but I was just like, Richard Briers! That was one of the last things he did.
It really was, yeah.
It really was. It's amazing. I mean, they must have paid him a pretty penny.
That's the thing, you think, I can't imagine there's a lot of money in this film. But still, it wasn't. Do you know what? I saw it. It was probably better than you'd imagine it.
Cockneys versus Zombie. The title is the joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you've got to go through 90 minutes of watching that play out.
Exactly.
It's like snakes on a plane. You go, yeah. Mm. Once you've done the trailer, though.
I remember years ago, me and my mate, we in fact, there was a group of us did it. And we'd seen the trailer for Steve Martin's Bringing Down the House. And we're going, God, that's depressing. And we're going, oh, let's go. It'd be really funny, wouldn't it, to go and see this film that looks terrible. And then he went, yeah, that'll be fun. And we went. And then you realise that these things are on for at least 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're just watching a terrible film. And I just think I'd get no pleasure from watching stuff that's
terrible. What was
Bringing
Down the House Low? I never watched it.
It's the trailer, but like it's that, but it's boring because it's on and on and on and on. And you go, oh, another scene.
I can't imagine. Mind you, I went to see, I think it was the original Pink Panther, not the original Pink Panther, the first Steve Martin Pink Panther.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never been in a quieter cinema. It was full, right? But no, there was one point when he did the hamburger bit, when he's going, hamburger! And I was the only person that laughed. And instantly, I put my hand over my mouth out of embarrassment because I was the only person in the whole cinema. And you go, it's a comedy. And I laughed out loud and I felt ashamed of myself. It was, yeah. I mean, I love Steve Martin. Yeah. Steve Martin never has to make another good film for the rest of his life. And he won't.
I remember seeing the trailer for Cheaper by the Dozen. It was either Cheaper by the Dozen or Cheaper by the Dozen 2. And in the trailer, there's a joke. And they were like kind of family movie, so they were like playing to like quite a sort of charming family.
But I don't associate Steve Martin with family movies.
No, not at all.
I don't know why he went on and was just like, I'm going to be, you know, America's dad.
Yeah.
And you go, you're
a weirdo.
You're a weird guy, and he's father of the bride, basically. It's like his career split, didn't it?
Mm.
Where he started doing stuff like Parenthood.
Great movie, that Parenthood. I think it's.
I don't love it.
I think it's got the bit where he gets to do that.
People love Parenthood.
Yeah, I didn't know that I loved it. It was on like late one night recently, and I watched it on TV, and I was like, oh, this is great, because it has it's a real it all works on all the kind of beats and all the kind of emotions working. Actually, it isn't. It does work, and it's got him as the. He gets to do his cowboy bit, where he gets to do his Steve Martin bit.
Yeah, but that's it. You just like, this is a Steve Martin bit that's thrown into a film that, you know, and I would rather watch Steve Martin than Steve Martin acting all straight.
But I think he is good. I think he is good, and I think it's a cowboy real
Gil.
Ensemble. Yeah.
Cowboy Gil, and he does the balloon animals.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's really good bits in it. And then you've got to sit through all that Tom Hulse stuff, and I just find Tom Hulse a little bit. I really like Tom Hulse.
I was going to say, I like Tom Hulse.
In other films, but I find him really. I guess he's meant to be unpleasant, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I find him accidentally unpleasant. I just find his delivery.
Oily. I think it's a really good movie. I think it's sort of surprising, and it feels really ahead of its time now. It feels modern. And it feels like a modern film.
It's got Joaquin Phoenix in it, right?
Yeah.
Was he Leaf Phoenix in that?
I think he was Leaf then. It's a funny thing, isn't it? No one talks about that now.
Well, they used to be called Leaf.
Yeah.
And now it's called Joaquin. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. So the Joker trailer. What do you think of that?
Of course. Yeah, and I'm really up for it. Really up for it.
What do you think of the trailer, though?
I liked it. It's what I thought, though. It didn't surprise me. When you hear about, when you read about it, you go, oh, I'm doing this Joker film. It's going to be like this. You go... Okay. And then when people see the trailer, they go, have you seen the trailer? It's like, that's what they said it was going to be like.
Yeah.
You know, that was exactly the tone I was expecting.
Yeah, but I was surprised about how much I really... there's two things. I really enjoyed it. I think it's... I hope they don't fuck it up. I hope it ends up being... I hope there's more to it than what they've already shown. I hope they haven't sort of basically put the whole film in there.
Mm.
But if that's an indication of what it's going to be like, then I think it's great. I really like what they've done. I think it's weird that Martin Scorsese is executive producing it.
Is he still? Because I thought he was, but I thought I don't know if he's moved away from it now.
I think he has to be.
Because it feels so much like a...
It's referencing...
King of Comedy.
Taxi Driver, King of Comedy. It's like... But it's just like...
But Robert De Niro is like Jerry Lewis in it.
Yeah, that's great if they kind of do that, but then I also feel like I've already seen this film in my head now.
Yeah.
And if it's just a case of turning up and then watching it play out,
yeah,
and it's Martin Scorsese basically producing a Joker themed remake of all of his greatest hits, it's just kind of I'm not sure, I don't know what that is.
No, exactly. It is weird. You watch it, you go, that's exactly what it looks like. And that's sort of what I was imagining as well. It's that kind of... Yeah, exactly. A Joker theme remake of Taxi Driver.
Sorry, we're both ill.
And yeah, we are.
We're both still ill
for the second week running.
Yeah, but I think it does look really good.
Mm.
That's my input.
He is very good. Joaquin.
I remember, you know, they used to do those free magazines in cinemas.
Oh, yeah, and like Flicks.
Yeah, I think it was before. It must have been around the time of Gladiator, but it was before he was like a big name. And they did a pun on his name, which basically only works if you can't
say it in a certain
name.
Way.
You must be Joaquin. And it's just like, it doesn't work, guys. Because although it's spelled a bit like Joaquin, you must be Joaquin Phoenix.
It's lovely stuff.
Lovely. And now he's the Waka. Joaquin Phoenix is the Waka. I can't wait for Waka to come out. Waka, Waka. That's his catchphrase.
Works on several levels.
Works on a level.
Works on 1.5 levels.
So the cunt over at the shop, literally, there's no fucking Levi Roots this week.
Oh, come on. Is it because you bought it last week?
Yeah. There's no diet drinks. There's no Pepsi Maxes. There's nothing, right?
Well, he has no suppliers.
No, like as you buy it, you're like, so this week I've had to buy Berry Fanta, and I went up, and it was £1.40 for a can of.
£1.40 for a can of Fanta.
Yeah. £1.40 for a can of Fanta.
Holy moly.
Right, and he said it's £1.40. I went, £1.40? Right? You know, I'm pretty flush.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I haven't got a problem with spending money on the good stuff in life.
Oh, yeah.
But £1.40, I'm not going to throw the money away.
No.
I would say 60p for a can.
I reckon, go up to, if they said 89p, I'd be like, sure.
If they said 80p, which is what they are in the vending machines at work, then if I did 80p, then I would go, that's the top.
Or tomorrow's parties.
That's the top end. Tomorrow's parties?
Yeah.
What's tomorrow's parties?
You said 80p, so I said, all tomorrow's parties.
I don't know what that is.
ATP.
A TP.
A T P.
All tomorrow's parties. Is that a company?
It's that festival, isn't it, that they do, ATP. I've gone on a tangent that hasn't worked.
No, go on. I don't mind this.
Okay.
I'm learning.
So you said 80p, like the price, and I in my head, it was like the letters ATP is what they call the acronym for All Tomorrow's Parties.
What the fuck is All Tomorrow's Parties?
Like those music festivals they do, don't they? They do them all over the world. They do them in the UK and in
festivals?
The USA. They're called All Tomorrow's Parties.
I've never heard of them.
Oh, okay.
I've never heard of them. All Tomorrow's Parties.
And it's a Velvet Underground song, isn't it? For the names of the.
I get Velvet Underground mixed up with another band.
Who's the other band?
Is it Velvet Revolver? Is that a band?
What were those ones that are like Guns N' Roses, but aren't? What were they called?
Well, there was a Slash band.
Yeah, what were they called? Were they called... this is a good show, isn't it? It's like two people with...
Anyway, I bought this Berry Fanta. £1.40.
£1.40. 80p.
£1.40. And he said, yeah, there's loads of sugar in it. It's the sugar tax.
Well, not that much.
He said it's from America.
I get a bag of sugar as well. How much is that?
He said it's from America. He said he shipped it over from America for us.
He's done nothing.
Just
you haven't
get
got a supplier. You
Pepsi
don't sell Mars
Cherry. Get some fucking Pepsi Max Cherry. Right? Get some fucking Pepsi Max Cherry. Get some Levi Roots. What's it called?
Caribbean Crush.
Get some. Look, mate, when you sell out of a product, you phone up your supplier and you say, we've sold out.
Can we have some more, please? They call you, don't they, and say, what do you need this week? And he's probably got. And you probably go round and he goes, I've done my little thing. I'm ticking off what I've sold. Pepsi Max Cherry. I've got a Berry Fanta. That's gone. I've got some sweet cigarettes. And then he go round, and then he does his little order, and the man probably rings him up. Maybe it's done online now.
I don't need anything, actually. Do you know what? I'm having a declutter.
Yeah.
I don't think I need anything.
He's watching Marie Kondo, and he's going, actually, there's a lot of sweets in here.
I feel like I'm a hoarder, so I should probably... Do you know what? I'm not going to replace anything anymore, because I feel like it's just all bearing down on me every day. Finally, getting rid of some of this stuff.
I've got a red Bounty, but it doesn't make me feel happy inside when I look at it.
Does it make me happy?
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. That's no, going.
It's going.
It's going. It's going. Oh, bloody hell. I've got some eggs in here from 2013.
Do they make me happy?
Do they make me happy? No, I'll just sell them on. Absolutely. Slash
Natalie, do you go in that shop? Yeah. What do you reckon of it? What's your opinion? No. No, good.
No, it's there because it's near.
Mm.
But I can't imagine there's enough people. I mean, there's a co-op like
sure.
3 minutes up the road.
For sure.
And then there's, you know, Nisa.
Mm.
Nisa.
Nicer.
Tesco and
Sainsbury's local.
The co-op is the biggest because it's the most like an actual supermarket,
but it works because they know we're all too lazy to go an extra 2 minutes ago. I'll just get this
I'm at the location that I need to be in. Look, there's a shop over there. I'll get a, you know, anyway. So I've got a Fanta Berry Blast. It's not called a Berry Blast, it's just called Fanta Berry.
Live on.
I'm going to tell you what I think of it. Is it radio? In fact, it only would work
on radio. It is radio.
It would only work on radio. It's fine. It's not as sweet as I was expecting it to be. Considering I did pay premium for it.
Yeah, it better be really fucking sweet for £1.40.
I was quite disappointed in that. Yeah.
Is it quite tart then? Quite bitter? Berries in a kind of, you know, tart way.
No, it's not tart. It's bright blue. Ah. Do you know what? It's growing on me.
Out of 10?
Out of 10, I would give it a 3 because it's not what I wanted. What I wanted was a Pepsi Max cherry.
Yeah, sure.
Now I've got this, but I've also got the added guilt that I'm going to go to the gym after this. And I'm just going to have to do extra work to work it off. Do you know what I mean? It's just like you go, wow, is it worth the calories? It's simply not worth the calories. So Slash is in Velvet Revolver.
And you got confused between Velvet Revolver and the Velvet Underground?
Not musically.
Right.
I'm just bit basing it on names.
Yeah, sure.
A bit like ATP.
Yeah.
So, De Niro said there is a link between Murray Franklin, the talk show host he plays in Joker, in Walker, and Rupert Pupkin, his character in The King of Comedy. He also said he would have been open to properly reprising his classic role had that been on the table.
He's up for anything now, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
something like, there's not a lot. I think Robert De Niro's like, oh, I'm not doing that.
this is impressive from the star of Taxi Driver.
And Dirty Grandpa.
This is not impressive from the star of Meet the Little Fockers. fucking hell. You can burn 140 calories in less than 15 minutes using a high intensity exercise. It takes somewhat longer using less intense workouts. Yeah.
How many calories is that, though? Your fruit berry drink.
I mean, what's that meant? You can burn 140 calories in less than 15 minutes using a high-intensity exercise. It takes somewhat longer using less intense workout. I mean, why have you bothered messaging us that? Do you know what? When we play a song...
You can burn 140 calories in less than 15 minutes. Or longer if you just sit on the sofa.
You can run a mile in a minute, but if you walk it, I mean, it will take, what, 15 minutes? Is it 20 minutes? 20 minutes to walk a mile, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, more fun facts coming at you after these messages. Google account. So
I always find those statistics, they always make me a bit sad, like, well, I'm never going to do that. They always just seem far too much, like, oh, you know what, you can actually burn off that. That munchie you've just eaten, someone's left you in 20 minutes.
What's
and you
a
go,
munchie?
You know, those little sweets, caramel, biscuit, chocolate.
Oh, right, so this is one of those weird things where it says this has 150 calories per serving.
Yeah, well, that must
How
be a serving.
How many servings is this can, though?
Well, that was
It's
that,
like
half
when they say,
pint?
When you eat like a packet of crisps and you go, well, what else have we got in the fridge? And then you look at the label, it says, this is 16 servings. You go, oh boy. So the average person will burn between 80 and 140 calories per mile. Not me, 200.
If you're looking to burn 140 calories each day,
these are favourite activities
such as swimming, biking, walking. I mix things up a bit with different activities.
Oh, I burn off 140 calories a day. have we had anyone emailing in telling us what they've been a fan of this week? No.
It was worth it.
I was very heartfelt and sincere.
Yeah,
last
if anyone wants to tell us.
So I tell you what, guys, we'll play hardball. I'll give you one more chance, and we'll make this show your show. And if you fancy telling us what you've been a fan of this week, the listeners at home or at work or in the car. You've downloaded it on an app.
Yeah, it could be on your phone, couldn't it?
It's a podcast and it's a phone.
Anywhere you are.
Wherever you listen to. Where's the furthest? Hey, where's the furthest that people listen? I think it's probably John in America. Oh, God. Just fucking message us in and tell us what you want us to fucking talk about. All right? Don't make me fucking come over there. I'm just fucking... Just tell us what you've been a fan of this week. Tweet us at FUBAR... What? At FUBAR?
FUBAR Radio.
You need to press the button if you're going to tell us. At FUBAR Radio. Hashtag I've been a fan of.
Yes.
And, or hashtag Nick and Nat's fan club. And,
or hashtag Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf.
Don't message us directly.
Or shout at us in the street.
I get a lot of clutter in my Twitter. They should call it clutter. Yeah. They should. Just fucking message us. Let us know you're out there.
If you're stuck somewhere, you can let us know as well. If you're stuck down a well or something.
Got a bit of fan mail this week, so I'm just going to... What's the song? Here we go. Email. Hi, guys. Long-time listener. First-time email. Wow. First email.
Wow. Keeping up with the times.
You make me laugh and educate, entertain and inform me. For the most part, you make me laugh and educate.
As a teacher,
Us for your career. You make me laugh and educate, entertain and inform me. For the most, for the most part, sometimes I disagree with you, but that's okay.
It's okay.
Can listeners be guests, please? I would be equally as funny as you. I think you could keep up tone. Your surname should definitely be. Deaf, because this email is tone deaf. I'm not a fan of you, Tone, and in actual fact, I'm not sure how many listeners we have, but if you were to stop listening to our show, I don't think we'd miss you. Fuck you, Tone. Fuck you in your face. Any more fan mail?
Poor old Tone. But write in and let us know what you...
If this is your first email, then I would stop. I would stop while you're... I'd quit while you're behind, Tone.
Thanks, Dan.
I love these bits of fan mail that we get. It's really fantastic. I don't know what to do. It's 2 minutes. Have you been a fan of anything other than... We've got 2 minutes before we got to play a song. We don't have to play a song. It's our own format.
It is
formatted.
Oh, yeah. It's a magazine programme, very much like This Morning or The Right Stuff with Jeremy Vine. I watched Man from U.N.C.L.E. again this week.
The Guy Ritchie film. I've never seen it. Is it
really liked it?
Oh, because it's part of your Hugh Grant
thing. Yeah.
I was very excited to find out Hugh Grant was in it. I do love Hugh Grant.
He is good, and he's good in that sort of role as well. So he's then sort of being a sort of Mr. Waverley. He's like their boss.
Yeah,
and you go, yeah, he's good, isn't he? Like I do, I'm constantly going, he's good in all these things. I really like him.
He's incredible in Paddington 2.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah,
and you're just like, why haven't you been doing this?
Mm.
Why? Yeah. As much as I love music and lyrics, why have you been making these films when you could have been doing the, you know, it's a bit of a shame to be like, oh, Hugh Grant's reinvented himself as a better actor. Hugh Grant's reinvented himself by doing more interesting films. Yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? Because you go, you could have been doing this the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. There was bits at the time, I remember at the time, he was originally cast or rumoured to be the scientist in Mars Attacks that Pierce Brosnan eventually did. And everyone going, yeah, why didn't you do that? That seems like a better fit to do that sort of kind of...
What, than Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah.
I thought Pierce Brosnan was great in that.
Me too, but I think it was a... I think if it was a thing where Grant turned it down or turned his nose up at it, I think it was probably at a time when he was blowing up and probably thought, I don't need to be.
I've just done 9 months.
Yeah.
I think I'm all right. I've just had a blowjob. I think I'm all right. yeah, I don't know. I really like Pierce Brosnan.
Me too. Again, he's
it's
like...
But it's one of those things when you go, you never guess who the new James Bond is. Who? Mrs. Doubtfire's rival. Mrs. Doubtfire's love rival. All right. Okay.
That makes sense, yeah. I thought that while I was watching it, actually.
All right. Yeah, there's that bit. Oh, I suppose there is that bit when he gets hit on the back of the head by a lime.
And he, like, yeah, and he probably could have that in a cocktail, couldn't he? A bit of that or something. In order to,
yeah. That's a bit when he has the seafood allergy. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Good old. Yeah. But, you know, very good Bond, let down by his movies. It's a shame. You go, it's like Ben Affleck, though,
I think
isn't
he was really good for, like, the time. He felt like it's a very 90s Bond when you think about it. It's very, like, I get it. It's that. It feels like it's of its time, doesn't it?
I just think that he is, like, almost like a timeless Bond. He is, like, I don't really like James Bond films.
There
are a couple that I love, but as a franchise, I am so, like, not fussed about it. I don't sort of, like, enjoy all of the nostalgia, and I don't really enjoy, like, all the fetishizing of, like, oh, his car, you've got to have the car. Who gives a fuck what car he drives? I don't care. I don't care about what gun he uses. I don't care. I don't care about any of it, right? And in actual fact, when you watch something like Commando, where Arnold Schwarzenegger kills someone and says something funny afterwards, he says something rather amusing afterwards for 88 minutes, you go, this is basically all you really... That's what I want out of a Bond film. I don't want it to be, like, gritty and realistic.
Well, that's what like, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was like. You watch it and you go, well, this is actually, like... These are, like, Bond films, but they're actually fun, and they're, like, you know, 100 minutes in and out. Things are blowing up. There's funny things happening. And it's got all the bits that you kind of would want. And that it always, I have that with them, because I really like sort of 60s spy movies more than I like a lot of, like, I like a lot of the films that are, like, rip off James Bond movies more than I like James Bond.
In like Flint?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And then Matt Helm?
Yeah, yeah. And the ones that are kind of sillier, where they've got, like, robots and things in them as well, but they're, like, spy, I just find them more sort of more entertaining, because I think they're just a bit more fun.
Mm.
And I think the 60s Bonds are quite good. Like, when I actually sit down and watch one, I go, oh, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. And I quite like, you know, I like Roger Moore, but they're probably, again, they're all films that probably are a bit, like, 20 minutes too long. They're all like, okay.
They're all 20 minutes too long. They're boring. You get to a point and you go, fucking hell, this is boring.
Mm.
I really love The Man with the Golden Gun.
Mm.
I like that because I like Roger Moore in it. I like Christopher Lee. I like the settings. It's one of the few James Bond films where I, like, go, oh, the locations are really good in this one, you know. So, yeah, I really like The Man with the Golden Gun. And it feels like, because it's not, like, about saving the world, it's about going head-to-head with, like, an assassin.
Mm.
It kind of feels different from the others.
Yeah.
It's got, like, it actually feels like it's got an alternate storyline. You know, they go, well, what is he doing if he's not saving the world from destruction? Who else is in it? Is that the one with Knick Knack in it?
Yeah, yeah. What's the one where, I mean, this is going to be terrible, so we just go, which James Bond film? What's the James Bond film where Roger Moore drives the car under the sea?
I mean, I don't know them enough.
But there's a bit in that where he comes up like that, he drives up, and it's, oh, because it's post-Jaws, isn't it? And they have a Jaws joke where the car's driving up on a beach and all the kids are, like, running out of the water, but it's actually James Bond in his car that he drives out from the beach. And when he gets there, it's Roger Moore in, like, in like his bow tie and things. And there's just a bit where he opens the window and with one hand drops a fish out the window. And you go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Because there's no water inside the car.
Why is there a fish in the car?
But also you go, that's fine. Yeah, it is. It's like a totally fine joke.
I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But once you see the opening of True Lies, it's just like, what's the point? It's over, guys. Stop making them. It's over. Like that bit at the beginning when he wears the wetsuit and he takes the wetsuit off and he's wearing the white tuxedo underneath. Mm. And then he blows up the gate and then he runs away and the dogs are after him. But he does the ballroom. It's just the opening of True Lies is just incredible.
It does. It's almost, but I think it might be one of those franchises that might not be in the hands of the people that serve it best.
No, exactly.
Like, it's just that kind of, as a premise.
Basically, James Cameron made a James Bond film in the opening 20 minutes of True Lies. Mm. And he goes, these are all of the elements that you need to make a James Bond film. And he does it. And he goes, that's how you do it. And then he moves on. And it's just, I just think it's,
But, and you did, I think, sort of Man From those kind of films, you sort of go, this is kind of better than the Bond films. But they're, you know, they're kind of like based on source material, which is just like a rip-off. And they'd all sort of acknowledge it. It's like, yeah. Because it's almost like what you imagine a James Bond film is like in your head is better than what they are like.
I have seen every single James Bond film once, except for Man with the Golden Gun, which I've seen about 30 times, right? And it's just like you go, so what's the one that I probably really, really enjoyed, which is the one that everyone really enjoyed the most recently, was Casino Royale. Saw it once at the cinema, never watched it again.
Hmm.
Anyway, so what I think about Pierce Brosnan is that he wasn't really well known before he was Bond.
Hmm.
So you can't really cast Bond as a movie star. So you can't go, which movie star would be the best Bond? Mm. So I don't think that you can have... Bond isn't really like a part where you go, Idris Elba would be good, because Idris Elba's everywhere.
And also, you know, like Daniel Craig was in... He was in some movies, but like quite small British movies.
Well, they've got the guy from Layer Cake. He was basically... Of that time, you go, there are really only a couple of actors that you would consider, which would be like Clive Owen... And Daniel Craig, and you go, yeah, right. And they're of the same status, and they're kind of making the same sort of films. And it's just like one or the other, that's fine. With Pierce Brosnan, it was kind of like he had like exactly the right career in order to go into be Bond. And he's sort of like, I guess, post Bond, being Bond has probably helped him. He's probably making more films than
if he'd never been
Bond. So that is weird, but you don't feel like he was the star is the franchise, isn't it?
Yeah. And yeah, most people aren't, are they? I guess it's like it's that kind of Roger Moore is like, well, we have that bloke who's the saint on TV.
We get the guy that's the saint, and then he went on to do sort of Wild Geese, and then he was in the Jean-Claude Van Damme directed The Quest.
And Noel's House Party, one series where he's Noel's, I think he's Noel's landlord or something.
But Sean Connery was like a mega star.
Yeah, but wasn't before Bond, you know.
No.
Absolutely. Again, like he's at a kind of like, who shall we get? And I think I've read something recently about it, that apparently it was like, they were looking to cast someone for Bond and they were looking at big name stars. And I think a lot of them turned it down, or they were just like, oh, I'd rather have someone a bit young.
I think they wanted Cary Grant. At one
yeah,
point,
I think it was all that. And David Niven and people, I think they were talking about. And then I think like there was someone on, there's someone like, there's a secretary or something. And there was like, they were just like, she was saying, well, there's this guy who's in this film. And she sort of pointed out that there's like every woman in Pinewood Studios fancied this bloke who's in a film. And it's like, but everyone, like everyone's like, oh, Jesus. And he's like, well, who's that? And it turned out to be Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, maybe we'll go for the one who essentially all the women are just going mad over.
Yeah.
And it's that's what they did. They got like, they go, actually, let's get that bloke then.
That's how they, yeah, that's how they cast Flashdance, isn't it?
Oh, was that it?
They got, it's not really of its time.
Right.
Well, it is of its time. But they got like three pictures of, I think Sharon Stone was one of the women on Flashdance, and they said, which one of these do you most want to have sex with? And they went, that one. And so they said, she's hired.
Oh, that's
basically, they were doing it 20 years before with they Sean were. Connery. Yeah. When Sean, it's weird watching early Sean Connery films, like when he was trying to make it big in America and he plucked his eyebrows and he's got these pencil thin eyebrows, and Marnie was what I watched recently, and he just looks really odd with tiny eyebrows. It's like Dustin Hoffman at the beginning of Tootsie. Dustin Hoffman's eyebrows are sort of like, obviously because he needs to wear drag at some point. But before he's come up with that idea, Dustin Hoffman has these tiny little eyebrows. And you go, yeah, it's because you're going to dress up as a woman.
It's a good movie, isn't it, Tootsie?
Bill Murray's best movie.
It's Joey's brilliant.
Right, I'm going to play a song now.
Skin and bones. And night, and I live in the absence of light.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
I can't hear you. I had my headphones on. What were you saying?
Oh, right. I was saying that bit of Alice Cooper sounded like Friday on My Mind by the Easy Beats, which you played the other week.
Oh, yeah. He's probably greatly influenced by them. Oh, yes, that was it. David Morrissey.
David Morrissey.
We were talking a couple of weeks ago about how my mum was convinced that David Morrissey was in Our Friends in the North. And, of course, he wasn't in Our Friends in the North. And my mum was never convinced he was in Our Friends in the North. He was in Our Mutual Friend. And that is what he played, a bad guy in Our Mutual Friend. There you go. So my mum is correct. Again.
Well,
you'll never guess what fucking the first question is on this randomly fucking on Ridley's Games Room
Ridley's
movie buff quiz. The first card I've picked up,
yeah.
Bond actor Daniel Craig is married to which British actress?
Rachel Weisz.
Is it A, Keira Knightley?
No.
B, Rachel Weisz. C, Emma Thompson, or D, Kate Winslet? She certainly does. If we're talking about Oscars, that is.
This is a good show.
This is a great show. It's a five-star show. Five
Absolutely.
Star. You're listening to Five Star Fan Club. Which Starship Enterprise crew member does Chris... I hate this game. It's so boring. He plays Captain Kirk, of course. I have to finish it off. Captain James T. Tiberius Kirk. So last night I went to a screening... What have I been a fan of this week?
What have you been a fan of this week, mate?
Last night I went to a screening of Daisy Haggard's My Sister from Uncle. I went to see a screening of her new sitcom that
she's on next week, isn't it?
I think it starts next week.
Yeah.
Went to a screening. It was like the cast and crew screening. She invited me along, which was unnecessary, but I went. And odd, because people were like, what are you doing here?
Oh, really?
And it was like, I'm being supportive. But it's fucking incredible. It's incredible. The tone of it is, I found it really funny. There's like proper jokes in it, but it doesn't feel jokey. It just feels very natural and organic. And it's also really sad. But like, it's underpinned with a melancholic sort of
tone.
Yeah, but a better word than tone. But yes, but the whole sort of like feeling of it is just very melancholic and sad, and but it doesn't like go. It's not like it doesn't spend the whole film, whole show, kind of crying about it. It's just really funny and really beautiful, and it looks great. And anyway, I only watched the first episode because that's all they screened. But I think it's going to be available on iPlayer. You can download the whole thing. It was for BBC Three, but they upgraded it, and I think it's going on the Fleabag spot, BBC One.
Oh, nice!
I don't think it's really like the same as Fleabag, but hopefully people will be not open-minded. It's just good. But I think sometimes when you get in a set of a mindset, you think this isn't that. Like when we did Loaded, people were like, going, "This isn't Uncle," and you go, "It's a totally different format." Uncle is a half-hour sitcom. This is a comedy drama. It's an hour, and it's on Channel 4. It's a different thing. So people can kind of like be in weird mindsets with TV. They complain about what it isn't, other than what it is.
Mm.
But yeah, it's brilliant. She's really smashed it. And also Solomon Grey, who were a guest before, they did the music for it, and the music's great. It's just everything about it's brilliant.
How'd you get them?
How did she get them? They're married. It's just really good. Really, really good. And then, I think you can download, I think you can watch it all on iPlayer, and then it'll be as a box set, and then it'll be like on week by week on BBC One.
Mm-hmm.
Like old fashioned telly.
It's good. Here's a good bit of trivia. You know this, Nick. Her dad directed Blood on Satan's Claw.
Yeah.
Lovely bit of trivia.
Well,
it's a good movie.
It's not necessarily trivia, is it?
Well, isn't it? Like, I suppose.
It's just a fact, isn't it?
And he also directed Pennies from Heaven. the Dennis Potter thing with
did he?
Yeah, with Hoskins.
Did he?
Mars bars.
Was that
looked like a Mars bar.
That was before Steve Martin did it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's based on.
Yeah. Steve Martin loved that.
Actually, brilliant.
Have you seen Steve Martin's version?
No, I've never seen it.
It's like oddly not available. I've got it on DVD. I got it on a Spanish DVD.
I think it was one of those things that at the time, I remember like having those things where you'd have like printed, probably in Flicks magazine, a filmography of Steve Martin, and that'd always be in it. And it'd always be like, I can never find this in the video shop. And what's nice is it was probably saving me from watching a film that was going to not be a Steve Martin film as a kid that I would want to have watched. Mm. Like, it feels like, oh, yeah, that's why I can't get it. Because it's not going to be like Man with Two Brains.
No. And I don't think it's, I don't know. So what's Pennies from Heaven set in America?
No, it's set in the UK.
Oh, right, so the American one. So Steve Martin's one is set in America. Mm. And it's kind of an Americanized. With him and Bernadette Peters.
I really like to see it now,
what
yeah.
What a woman.
Mm.
She's in loads of films, and then none. I went to see her sing a couple of years ago. Where was it? It was at the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Just her?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
She kept making jokes about how we were paying for her... what do you call it? Condo in Malibu. And it was like... Yeah, we are.
That's like that thing we saw.
She
that.
Did like exactly an hour and then fucked off. And it was like, okay, cool.
I've done my contractually obliged time.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
She was really gracious and it's kind of like, oh, I've had such a lovely time. It's just like, this said an evening with Bernadette Peters. You've given us 1 hour. I'll see you in the bar, Bernadette.
We saw that Bill Murray thing, didn't we? They're all...
Oh, fuck me. That has not lasted well in my memory.
I quite like it. And actually, there's bits of it I still listen to that I really like. But he had
the
that
bits
thing.
Of the Bill Murray thing that you still listen to. What? Yeah. Was it an album?
Yeah, there's an album of it. And,
is that what he was doing?
He was
basically selling an album.
He was selling an album that was him and like a cellist.
Yeah.
Who's like apparently one of the, I don't know, but like I say this as if I'd be, I'm only acknowledging it so I don't say that I knew who this guy was.
Yeah.
But he's supposedly, not supposedly, I'm sure he actually is. One of the top cellists in the world.
They met each other on a plane, didn't they?
Yeah, and they had a chat something.
And then by the end of it, they were just like, hey, let's do a thing together.
Yeah. And I did enjoy it. And that night was sort of... Because a lot of it is just readings and songs. And they're not funny.
Mm.
Or they're not like... Sometimes he makes things quite funny because he's naturally quite funny. But it wasn't trying to be a funny night or something. And he did that thing where he acknowledged he did like... Sort of about 15 minutes in, he sort of pauses and says, oh, yeah, it's about this time of the night. People realise that this isn't the show they're expecting. And he goes, and I don't mind that, you know.
If you want to leave.
If you want to leave, just go. And I remember going, yeah, it is funny. But I guess the other thing about it is everyone's gone, no, because I paid £40.
And I don't want to look uncultured.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's social bullying. What was that like? Oh, yeah, so I thought it was all right. But it reminds me of William Shatner's album, Has Been, which I think is just... the greatest. I just love it so much. But that was based around William Shatner. So William Shatner did an album with Ben Folds, and it's called Has Been, and there's some songs and there's some poems, and Nick Hornby wrote a poem on it, and Henry Rollins is on it, and it's kind of like, you know, it's really kind of like eclectic mix of weird people. And William Shatner's voice is incredible on it, and non-ironically, it's just an amazing album. And and it's one of the albums that got me into sort of like doing performance poetry. When I sort of do my poems, that was one of the things that made me go, I want to do something like that William Shatner album. So it's not very lofty.
That's interesting. No, but I do. I that kind of music accompanying like spoken word, I love it when it's good stuff.
When it's good, yeah. And the William Shatner thing, I don't think there's a bad track on it. I think it's incredible. It ranges from being really funny to being really sad, and I like that mix. And anyway, so William Shatner was on the phone to a record company, and
he said, "Oh, I want to do an album." And they said, "Oh, yeah, okay, well, what sort of album?" He goes, "Well, I don't want to do anything that's kind of like cheesy and kind of like ironic. I want to do kind of like a..." And then he had Call Waiting, and he goes, "Hang on a minute, I've just got a call." And he put them on hold, and he goes, "Hello." And he says, "Oh, this is Ben Folds." And he goes, "Oh, hello, Ben. Do you want to do an album?" And they went, "Yeah." And then he goes, "I'm just going to put you on hold." And he went over, back over to the record company, and he went, "Oh, yeah, me and Ben Folds are going to do it." And they were like, "Oh, yeah, great. That's fine."
But I think often it takes that, doesn't it? It takes someone who's a fan of something or a fan of that person to kind of almost reinvent them and go, this is like, I like you, and here's what I like about you. So I'm going to produce something, which is kind of what happened with Johnny Cash's later career, wasn't it? That it was like Rick Rubin thing is just like someone who goes, "No, what you should do is this."
Yeah.
And it's just like, "Oh, yeah, of course I should."
Yeah.
That, and it's that sort of reinvent someone.
Yeah, sometimes it takes an outsider's point of view to kind of...
Here's what people like about you.
But also sometimes it's not like the stuff that you've like sweated over for years and years that becomes the success of all things. It's the thing that's just a random occurrence where you bump into someone in the street and you go, "Oh, yeah, that's a good..." And then, you know, I won't get into that, but yeah. Anyway, so this week I've seen three films. So Ace in the Hole, starring Kirk...
I've never seen
Douglas.
It.
...Douglas.
That's one of his big ones, isn't it?
That I've never seen it.
It's a war one, is it?
I thought it was a war one. It's not a war one.
No, I've definitely not seen it.
It's about a journalist who basically... There is a guy that's trapped in some tunnels. There's been a cave-in.
Is he called Ace?
No, but it's sort of like really on the nose where you go, "Oh..." But there's
is it a big director? Don't know.
It's Billy Wilder.
Billy Wilder. Okay.
I think he wrote and directed it.
There we go.
So there's basically this washed up news journalist.
Chuck Tatum, played by Kirk Douglas.
Right. Is that fucking hell? Thanks, Natalie. So he's a washed up news journalist and news reporter, and he's basically gone to he's been banned from all the newspapers from the West Coast and the East Coast, and he's ended up in Albuquerque, and he's trying to get like a scoop, and there's a cave in, and this guy is basically trapped underground, and then he wangles it so the guy doesn't get rescued straight away, so that he can start. And everyone starts benefiting from this guy that's trapped underground. Like his marriage is over, basically, and then his wife starts sort of like getting... she works at a diner, and the diner starts making loads of money and everything. It's quite an interesting... It's not at all what I was expecting, and it's really moralistic, and it gets fucking dark. It's like jet black. Really good. Enjoyed that a lot. I have to write that up for my Twitter.
That film Trumbo was on TV the other
night. Yeah, I taped it. I started watching it, and I was sort of like fascinated by it, and then... I can't remember what film he was writing in the bit when I saw it. He was in the bath writing.
I'd seen it at the cinema.
But what film would it have been?
Is it Spartacus?
He was writing Spartacus. Yeah.
And it was just, I watched like sort of 10 minutes of it. It was just us flicking through channels, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this. I quite like this movie."
Because that plays Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, and Kirk Douglas is in it as one of the characters. And it's sort of, the thing that I never really got from that was that Kirk Douglas was like such a kind of powerful movie star for a while, and also would generate projects, like a sort of very modern movie star, where he'd almost be like Cruise, almost like producing and building projects around himself.
Well, that's what
and you go, "Oh, right, that's a great way of like..."
That's where Michael Douglas got it from.
Yeah, he's like a producer,
Michael
isn't
Douglas
he? Yeah,
was a producer. Michael Douglas basically bought the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest because Kirk Douglas made it famous on stage. He played R.P. McMurphy.
Oh, really?
On stage. And so Michael Douglas bought the rights so his dad could play it, and by the time the film got made, he was too old. So Michael Douglas is one of the producers on the film, the Jack Nicholson film.
Yes.
And he was a producer before he was an actor. He was in sort of like the streets of San Francisco as a TV star, produced a lot of stuff, and then I think it was Romance in the Stone was his first big hit. And then he used that fame to sleep with everyone.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's in an episode of Streets of San Francisco.
I've no doubt about it. He's been in. He's in an episode of. Is he in an episode of Columbo?
Is he?
He plays a bodybuilder in something. It might have been Streets of San Francisco, actually, that I've seen. But he plays a bodybuilder in something. That's good. He gets, like, rage issues.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's it.
Right, so that's the one. Yeah, it's sort of like a Columbo-type thing, isn't it? Just really quickly, so I went to see two other films. I saw two films in the cinema this week. I saw Pet Sematary on Sunday.
And?
I just think that it's a really complicated... They overly. If you were to describe to me the elements of Pet Sematary, I think that it's a very straightforward film that would be enjoyable. But this is kind of like... And they did it with the original film as well. It's because they're kind of trying to be really faithful to the book, but there's not enough room in the film to do everything justice. So there seems to be all these elements where... basically, it's... A family moved to the middle of nowhere by a busy road, and there's
that's right.
There's a pet cemetery that's in the woods, and if you bury something in the pet cemetery, it comes back to life, and the cat dies, so they bury the cat in the pet cemetery, and the cat comes back to life.
It's a bit evil.
But it's a bit evil, and then spoiler alert: one of the kids gets killed on the road, and. They bury the kid, and the kid comes back, and it's a bit evil. And you go, that's a fairly straightforward premise for a horror film. It's really dark, really sort of. Apparently, it's Stephen King's darkest novel, and he didn't want to. He went through a period of time where he didn't want to publish it, and I think he just ran out of books, and he was just like, I've got to publish it now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really dark subject matter. Laurie Rose, who did the cinematography on Elephant and Killing Machine that I made, he is the DOP on Pet Sematary. It looks gorgeous, and John Lithgow's in it. And as I was watching it, I was just thinking, I wish that they made as many John Lithgow films as they make Marvel movies, because he's just not in enough, and he's getting on, and I just fucking love him. He's brilliant. He's the best thing about... I think you really miss him from the Planet of the Apes sequels. Mm. He was in that first Planet of the Apes reboot, and I just thought he was great.
He's like a classical actor, isn't he? But American. He's got a lot in common, really, with like a lot of those sort of British classical actors. And I think that's why he works a lot over here, because he's very kind of theatrical in a sort of almost...
I also kind of completely forget the fact that he did Third Rock from the Sun. And you know, because he was in like those Brian De Palma movies early on, and then he was in the Santa Claus movie, then he was
Bigfoot
in Bigfoot and the Hendersons, and then he kind of like did 10 years of a sitcom, and now you've got old John Lithgow, and you go, he's fucking incredible, I love him. Anyway, I really like the original movie. Pet Sematary from the 80s. I think it's really underrated, and people always go, yeah, the tone of it's a bit...
I think its problem is it kind of has that look. It feels like a TV movie, it really feels like it. The actors are kind of like, oh, they're not great. But like, it's good.
It's got a fucking Ramones song. They wrote a Ramones... Can we get Pet Sematary by the Ramones, please? And we'll play it out at the end. They got a Ramones song. They wrote a song for it. And you go, it's fucking... Oh, I don't know. There's loads that really works about the original film. I sort of liked the remake. I didn't love it. And I just do think it's really complicated. There's a whole stuff where he's a doctor and he's getting haunted by this guy. But this guy dies and he comes back as a ghost and he haunts him. And you go, you haven't been to the pet cemetery yet. Why are you being haunted by this... surely all the spooky stuff should start happening once you introduce the pet
cemetery.
Also,
I quite like the idea of people moving next to a road and they've got, like, young kids and they go, oh, that's a bit dangerous, isn't it? Oh, maybe it's not a great place to move. And their cat gets run over and they go, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely proved it to me. We've got to move.
Yeah.
Should we just wait a bit? Yeah, well, it's probably not. It's probably going to be fine, isn't it?
Well, they kind of, like, let the kids run all over the place, and you just, like, go... I mean, and I think in the original it's a slightly better sell because you just sort of go, oh, God!
Yeah.
But in the remake, it's just kind of like... They just feel like bad parents, really. Yeah. but there's all sorts of, sort of, like, haunting stuff that happens, or ghost stuff and scary, spooky stuff that happens before the Pet Sematary is introduced. And the way the Pet Sematary is introduced in this one... It's kind of like it's sort of like absolutely ridiculous. So it didn't really hold it together for me. But I liked it. I did enjoy it. And as I say, Laurie Rose has done an amazing job. What was the other thing? I saw Shazam.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I want to. Well, it's a conversation that we don't have. We're 4 minutes over, so we need to get our guest on. But yeah, it's odd. I think from I found it. What's the word? Irresponsible. I think there were some bits in it that were irresponsible.
Oof.
Well, there's a bit when they get him to test whether he's bulletproof. They get him to they get these robbers to shoot him at point blank range in an amusement store. And then they shoot him in the face at point blank range. And the kid that isn't a superhero stood right next to him. And you go, he's in the firing.
Is that meant to be like they've got the mentality of kids, so they're like doing stupid things?
People get killed all the time with guns in America, and it's a kids' film, and they've basically got like going, oh, let's see if he's bulletproof, and they shoot him in the face. And even worse than that, there's a bit when they see if he's fireproof, and he gets in a cardboard box, and they cover the cardboard box in lighter fluid, and then they set him on fire. And you go, that's something that anyone can do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like it's fucking crazy. It's a fucking kids film. And I'm not a parent. I was feeling it, just like going, fucking hell. But there's loads to really like in it. But it's like 20 minutes too long. It's kind of like, come on, DC. DC have not made one. Oh, anyway, there you go. It's better than any of the other ones that they made. It was low budget. But like, people are like going, it's really good, because it sort of like reminds me a bit of Big. They jump up and down on a fucking giant piano in it. It's like, it doesn't remind you of Big. You haven't cracked some sort of code. It's directly referenced. It's saying, look at us, we're like Big. They're literally telling you. It's crazy. Anyway, we're going to go and get our guest from next door.
Don't play the game of time. Things that happened in the past just happened in your mind, only in your mind. Forget your mind and you'll be free. The writing's on the wall. If you choose, lovers never lose, 'cause they are free of thoughts unpure and of thoughts unkind. Gentleness clears the soul, love cleans the mind and makes it happening. The dragons have been bled. Loveliness is everywhere. Fear's just in your head. Fear is in your head. Only in your head. Fear is in your head. So forget your head and you'll be free. The writing's on the wall. Know it all. If you choose, just remember, lovers never lose, 'cause they are free of thoughts unpure and of thoughts unkind. Gentleness can clear the soul, love cleans the mind and makes it a free.
Fubar Radio.
We're back. And we're joined now in the studio by comedian Glenn Wool.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Merci. Bonjour. Are you on tour now?
Oui.
Oui. Were you gigging last night?
No.
No.
No, no, you weren't. Right, okay.
By the way, I'm out of French. If you don't have French. Any...
Not French-Canadian.
No, I mean, we're all...
past it, then. You could have believed it.
We are bilingual as a nation, so...
But are you
French.
Bilingual?
Oui.
Yeah.
Oh, of course you are.
I just had a whole conversation in French with you.
You did. Well, and I understood it, so I guess I'm bilingual.
Yeah, you're
like... Hey, man. Yeah. Swinging London, we're all a little bilingual, if you know what I mean.
I don't know what you mean. What do you mean?
Come over here, I'll show you.
Okay. All right, then, that sounds like a good deal.
French kissing.
Nah, I understand now. Right. I keep thinking about Hunt for Red October. Sorry. It's when Sean Connery is speaking in Russian, and then halfway through the scene, he stops talking in Russian and starts talking in Scottish.
Yeah.
I just like,
I quite like that.
I like the joke where you go, fucking hell, I know Russian. So you're on tour at the moment with your show Wool's Gold 2, The Iron Pirate, brackets.
Yeah.
The Iron Pirate bit is in brackets.
It was a poorly chosen joke. Nobody ever gets it. It's four people have went, I see what you did there. And they're at, it's actually good in that it's a conversation piece.
I don't know that I've got it.
What is the joke?
We've
got you in, because now you can explain your jokes.
That's always the way they're best served. Lengthy explanation. If you think of Wool's Gold, see, this is the problem too.
Fool's Gold. Yeah, I got that.
Right.
I got that.
What is the name of the chemical compound? Iron Pirate.
Oh, okay.
That is not even. I read it as pirate. It's not. But you have to make a few big leaps. It's like Indiana Jones when he had to just believe and step on that thing.
But the show the show has got more straightforward jokes in it, does it?
Oh yeah, yeah. The jokes in the show are way
very
better.
Clever. Very clever.
Yeah, I like to lead you into a false sense of security with the one to get you in the door going, well, none of these are gonna blast my head in two. Well, guess again, it was a trap.
So is it like a greatest hit show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it fun doing that?
Yeah, it's really fun revisiting some of the stuff and also realizing how much older you've gotten, like stuff that you used to really believe, and now you're like, whoo.
Do you do that, and have you sort of re-edited it to go back when you revisit it, or are you kind of like, do you do sort of like a commentary on some of your old...
I don't really do it like that, because, I mean... I'm not that famous. It's just like, there's a lot of people just going, oh, okay, well, we'll go see this guy. It's his best. Oh, well, good. Because it's his first of for us.
But you don't like say, this is an old bit of material. I can't believe I used to think like this guy.
I tried it a bit that way, but I find it's more like a diary now, where I go, you know, I first came to England and this is what happened, and then just cherry pick that way, because I did. There was some stuff that, I mean, stand up comedy's changed a lot in the last 25 years, and there's just simply things you can't say anymore.
It's changed a lot in the last 6 months.
I know, and there was a couple of spicier routines, and I thought, oh, can I do them? And I did them. I did them one night in Edinburgh, and like a table of six women just got up and left, and it really put a stink in the show, and I was like, oh, I gotta think about that. And I thought about it all night, and then I dropped it the next show, and it was way better. And I said to my tech, I was like, yeah, it was better because you know, no women got offended. And she's like, no, they weren't offended, they just went to the bathroom. They go out a drink. No, they were fine after the show.
So did you put it back in?
No, the show flowed better without it.
Do you think that was you then? Do you think you had a bit in your brain going, oh, maybe this isn't...
Yeah, I mean, it was perfectly timed for, like, for them to all get up and have a pee.
Exactly.
Like, right at the end of the bit. So, I mean, I already had trepidations about doing it. But, I mean, it's about the most offensive thing you can say.
But maybe they were like, well, that was incredible. It's not going to get better than this for at least 5 minutes. So yeah. This is a great toilet time.
Yeah, exactly.
And every toilet time is a great toilet time with me.
I moved them so much that their bowels needed to be evacuated.
Five stars.
Yeah, who knew the jokes could have that kind of power?
And is that because you think, is it because you've kind of grown as well, or you're saying, oh, well, I'm a parent now and maybe I don't find it's funny? Or is it strictly in your head you go, I don't think this works now because of the world's moved on?
No, they're all funny. It's just, structurally, there's just things that people have words that they can't hear anymore in an open-minded society. the whole concept around none of it. If I hear a word, then I stop listening.
Yeah, well,
but I think I do as well. Sometimes I'll go, oh, what was that? Where's this coming from or whatever? And that will just be like a word or something that
Some words just trigger people, and then they just, and it doesn't matter what context you're using it in.
It's not even really the immediate idea of being offended. It's just that idea carries more, or that word carries more weight, so that even if you're not necessarily offended by it, or you'd happily listen to the joke or whatever, it's more that you're slightly outside of it then, because your brain's gone, oof.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you're not thinking of it, like, and you're just listening to a joke.
I mean, like, in across the board, it's good in a sense that it's moved this way, because before there used to be like some of that subject matter is Black Diamond Run. Like, you better know what you're doing.
Exactly.
If you bring it up, and especially what happened to me, because I have a reputation of talking about things like that. If I go into a town and play in a club, there's three comics that really like me and want to be me. They get up and they're trampling over it all with like a year's experience, and then you got to go up and go, all right, well, you know that subject that man had no right talking about? I'm gonna try and bring it back. Can you listen to it now?
Yeah.
So it's good in a sense.
No, I think that's right. And I think it really does show your stripes, right? And you've been doing it for so long. Because if you can do it well, that's the difference. It's that idea that you can do that. And you can actually, people who are skilled enough can talk about whatever they like. And it's no one's going to get offended, because you know that it's coming from perspective, or it's thoughtful, or it's funny enough and coming from someone who's been going long enough that they can kind of pull it off.
I mean, you say no one's going to get offended.
Oh, right. But okay.
Sometimes, like now, attention is currency. So half the time they're not really offended. They're like, oh, this is my way to stick my face beside something nice. And all right.
But I think that's people putting themselves in a way that's almost like, I will get offended by this. Whereas actually, if you, someone who's actually thoughtful enough to have gone through the routine in their head and gone, well, I know what's offensive and not offensive about this, you may well have, like, you're probably correct. And you go, actually, I've not said anything remotely offensive.
Yeah.
But people will go, almost like they'll get a knee jerk of going, oh, well, actually, I'm offended by that.
Well, the implication is that you haven't thought about what you're doing.
The consequences of what you're talking about. Yeah.
Is that you, as a comedian on stage, you've gone, oh, well, that's disgusting.
You've tossed something out and you haven't thought about it.
But people get offended by all sorts of stuff. So, someone called me anti-Semitic because I got a lyric in one of my songs, which was, I say, I've got no time for the Dewey Decimal System. which is the library referencing system. And they said, you're anti-Semitic. I'm not saying Dewey. I'm saying Dewey decimal system. It's like absolutely crazy. Yeah. But that opinion, you know, was posted on social media, so that opinion exists. And you go, you can't correct that person.
I thought Donald Duck was a bit anti-Semitic when he named his nephews. come on, Donald. I've seen that one we addressed as Hitler, but
I love that joke. But of course, Donald Duck wouldn't have named his nephews.
Maybe it's Donald's sister. The brother wasn't in the picture.
Exactly.
By the time,
he's more of a father figure, isn't he?
Yeah.
To the kids.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. I just, I did like the joke. Nah, I just have to bring you up on that. It'd be ridiculous. If my sister was to have a baby, I would not go around and name it.
This is kind of would you call it if you could, though?
The golden child. And I'd say it in with air quotes.
There's not enough Ozymandias is around. That's what that'd been my opening to. So Glenn, what are you going to call your sister?
Ozzy Osbourne. What's that short for? What's Ozzy? Is it his surname?
I think it's a nickname for Osbourne.
Yeah.
So he's Osbourne.
So his name is Osbourne. It's sort of Osbourne.
His real name is Barbara. Who knew?
What is Ozzy Osbourne's real name?
Flipped a book open. Like she's got a book.
Yeah, she's got an encyclopedia
his biography right now. Let me see. Page one.
John Michael Osbourne.
Yeah.
Is that right?
His name is John Osbourne. Isn't there another John Osbourne? Oh, is there, Glenn? Is there another guy called John Osbourne?
I'm sure of it. I'm sure he's probably he's probably not famous or anything.
If this show was slicker, we could say that one of your choices that you've been a fan of is biographies of rock bands and singers.
Yeah.
Have you read I Am Ozzy?
No.
It's fucking shit. He doesn't remember any of his own stories. Right? It's like literally I've read, like, I read lots of biographies, and I used to. I've gone off reading. but there was like, so I read The Dirt, and there were all these Ozzy Osbourne stories in The Dirt, and you go, all right, and then you go back to, actually Ozzy Osbourne, and he goes, yeah, I don't remember any of that. And that's like what it is like. He remembers like his childhood, and then he's basically being reminded by people of what the stuff he did was.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my God, it's a hard read.
Do you know, Matt Kirshen sent me a clip of me. I was on stage at Late in Live, and this would have been like early 2000s, and it was Kitson emceeing, David O'Doherty wrapped in bubble wrap, and Jason Byrne also wrapped in bubble wrap, and they were having a wrestling match, and I was to be one of the managers of the of. I believe I was Jason's manager. It doesn't really matter. I wasn't actually his manager. But I watched that whole clip, and I seriously have no memory of that. I have no, like, you'd think that would be something that would, but none. Not even a
Oh, I hadn't thought about that for a long time. It's like, I've never
No, it's
about
gone.
That.
It's gone. Like, I was obviously just not around at that point.
That's a bit of a treat, though, isn't it? Or
yeah.
Is it scary?
Yeah, you know, well, where else did I go that
That was an hour.
I woke up with a hot sniper rifle in my bed.
Is that when you start going, wait, is it not 2017 now? Wait, what? It's like 3 years missing where you go, No idea.
Yeah. What did I do? What did I accomplish? I found a great novel under my bed.
Could you even like pinpoint that Edinburgh or whatever? Can you go, that's that year, so I was doing that then and this?
Yeah, I can tell it by the jacket and I know that's my jacket, and I know what size my pupils usually are. I can sort of trace it back to that moment. Yeah.
So, which biographies are you thinking of that you're particularly a fan of?
Do you know? It's just the one I just read, Billy Idol's biography.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Although I didn't, I say read it. Does this? It counts if you listen to them, right? You can
say you read it. Yeah.
But I've got a 17-month-old son, and the one thing I was doing. When I have afternoon naps with him, but I play the book over my phone, and Billy Idol actually reads his own biography. Yeah. So I don't know if my son's going to age thinking, yeah, my dad knew Billy Idol, and he used to call him all the time. I think he was a bit coked up or something, because it was just all about his childhood. It was like one of these conversations you couldn't get out of. And then I remember Steve Stevens turned to me and said, all right, Billy, just shut up.
Has he got a good reading voice?
Yeah, he sounds exactly like
Billy Idol.
Yeah. But, I mean, the reason, like, and I think... I think it's better to read biographies of people that you kind of like or you kind of knew about, You know, like, because I read every book about Guns N' Roses, and with those ones too, I'm just like, I wish everything was this. Like, I could be a genius if everything was as interesting to me.
That's what I say. Like, yeah. If I absorb like knowledge about films and what years they were made and who directed them and who starred in them and all that, and I know all of that. And if that was a course at school, I would have absolutely smashed it.
Yeah.
But I was just shit at French and languages and science and maths.
Well, just how quickly the book drains. Like, you buy it, you're like, okay, what's Duff McKagan have to say about the whole issue? You open it on the train, it was zoop, it's gone. It's gone. did I miss a chunk of it? No, you've just read that whole book.
Yeah.
And there's people that can read a book about anything like that.
But yeah.
I just have to be... Yeah, totally excited.
But I find film. Do I like actors? I don't think it's. I like band biographies because they're kind of more interesting. They're juicy, aren't they?
Well, it always gives you that little tidbit. Every biography, you'll find that. Like, I always wondered why Billy Idol had such a lame name. Like, because, you know, like, he was of the punk era. He was hanging out with the Sex Pistols. And you're like, Billy Idol? Why? Do you know why his name is Billy Idol?
Yeah.
Because when he was in a punk band, his report card said, his real name's William Broad. It says, Billy is too idle all the time, and he needs to make better... So his punk name was Billy Idol, like I-D-L-E.
Oh.
And that makes way more sense. But when it came time for him to write on the songwriting credits, he was worried he'd be associated with Eric Idol. So he changed it to Billy Idol.
I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, me too.
And also, Billy Idol did one, because we were talking the other week about songs from movies, songs that were written for movies.
Oh, yeah.
And
he
did one of the all-time greats. He did the song for Speed.
Speed. Yeah.
That is a fucking wicked song. And I think the VHS tape came with the Billy Idol music video at the end.
Ah.
Loved it. Or maybe it was at the beginning. Maybe you had to fast forward through it.
Billy Idol was always sort of a guilty pleasure of mine, too. Like, I do like him. But, you know, it just was that edge of, like, this is a bit, you know, this is a bit lame.
Right, yeah, he's one of those funny people. Because he sort of moved to America, it felt like he sort of feels almost more American than he does British now.
He's like an American version of what a British rock star would
be. Yeah, exactly.
Like, when he turns up in The Wedding Singer as Billy Idol, you kind of, like, go... that's almost like they've got an actor in to play a British rock star.
Yeah, he's like a Saturday Night Live version of a British rock star.
Although he was in The Doors, and he's fucking great in The Doors.
He's an intelligent man, you can tell.
Yeah.
But he's still got, you know, I mean, he's got a freebase and heroin problem behind him, so that always hangs a few L's on your L's and S's on your S's.
Often I think those people that have gone through that often come out wiser. If they don't die, they come out of it with this sort of wisdom that they've sort of learnt something. Or I always think that about Dennis Hopper. He always comes out this thing where you go, he's like, as an older man, he seems like super intelligent and super smart and wise. And you think, but your life, I mean, you can barely remember half of it, I bet.
Yeah.
It does, but he seems to have come out of it with this real sort of smart.
I don't want to be the one to break it to you, but he's gone further than that now. He had a horrible end to his life. Do you know what happened to him?
What happened to him? He was in Speed. That's Fan Club.
Yeah. Boy, you like Speed.
Okay. It's a Speed-based show.
I'm on Speed as well.
Yeah.
That's what I thought the film was going to be about. I thought it was about, like, drugs on a bus. I didn't realise that. When they said, Keanu Reeves is making a film called Speed, set on a bus, I thought it was about... People doing Speed on a bus, and he was like the bus cop.
That's the kind of that's the kind of people that take Speed too. It wouldn't be on a bus. It wouldn't be on a yacht.
He just goes out to people on a bus and goes, "You're cautioned. That's a caution for you."
Yeah. It's very easy to sell Speed on a bus. You just say, "Who wants some Speed?" 50 hands goes up. Nickel a bump.
But if fewer than 50 hands go up, the bus blows up.
Yeah, that was the original script. And they took a look at it. We go, we like it, but we're gonna a couple of the suits down in MGM. We're gonna tweak it a bit. Oh, sorry, tweak your word, not ours. Anyway, Dennis Hopper, star of Speed. He went through he had incurable cancer, and his wife he was divorcing his wife at the time, and she took him she was trying to take half of his stuff because she thought he was going to write her out of the will, I think. So it was just a really messy end to what's better than dying of cancer? Oh, a messy divorce. You're just fighting with somebody else. Check it in the book about Ozzy Osbourne, but I believe that's what happened to Dennis Hopper. Close to that.
It's a type of thing where I guess they must really have hated each other to also have that element of, well, I'm dying, I don't really care what's going to happen with my money, but also going, but I don't want you to have it.
Yeah.
So you think you'd sort of be freed of a lot of that stuff where you're kind of like, I don't care. Well, I mean, I'm dying. I'm Dennis, so I'll probably be fine.
Well, maybe he wanted to give it to someone else.
Yeah. Maybe it does transfer over. And you get up to heaven, and it's like, okay, did you bring your credit card with you, Dennis? Oh, I mean, I racked that up pretty high when I was
But what would happen if you just spent all of your money on a coffin? Would they be able to take half the coffin?
Oh, yeah. Well, like a solid gold coffin.
Kiss do coffins. They do Kiss caskets. The band Kiss.
Well, I can
and
see why.
And they've got speakers inside. And you just go, that is fucking... Like, Kiss are so fucking shameless. They will make money out of absolutely everything. And, you know, so if you're a Kiss fan, you can basically buy baby clothes and coffins. You know, so they've got you covered, cradle to grave. Yeah. It's absolutely fucking insane.
Did you hear what... Because it's their last tour, and they asked Gene Simmons why, and he was like, just have you seen the boots I have to wear? I'm 70. You look at those, you think of a 70-year-old man in big skull boots. I mean, his head is starting to resemble his boot.
Are you going to see them?
And I'm a Kiss fan, but I've never seen them live. It's never lined up, and I don't think now is the time to see them. Mm. You know,
Maybe. Well, it's the only time you've got.
Yeah, I might buy a Kiss video if they've got something live from the 70s and blow my mind. And
I think that with lots of people, like I do get that thing where people want to see people they like, but it isn't. What they're seeing is often not what they like about them. They're seeing a sort of...
Well, with Kiss, I mean, Tommy Thayer. Is it Tommy Thayer or Tommy...
Rock magazines, you never know how to say it.
Gene Simmons hired Tommy Thayer, who was the head of the Kiss fan club, and he used to clean out Gene Simmons' gutters. And he hated Ace Frehley so much that he just goes, anyone can do your part. So he got the guy that cleaned out his gutters.
One they made dress up like a cat?
No, he's the one they made dress up as Ace Frehley. So basically, you know, the whole point of giving them makeup was that they could fire anyone they wanted. And they go, yeah, you're out of the band. And it's my gutter man. It's my pool boy. My pool boy is going to wear your makeup and half the audience will think it's you. It's fucking insane what they did. Like, Ace Frehley is my favourite member of Kiss. And you just don't go... So when you watch like the old 70s interviews of when Ace Frehley's fucked off his face and just enjoying himself, you go, he's lovely. And then you see fucking Gene Simmons just jealously glowering at him, like going, like some sort of fucking spoiled princess. And you go, fucking hell. Ace Frehley and Peter Criss were my favourites, but they're the fuck ups, aren't they? And then now when you go and see Kiss, it's sort of like, this is Disney Kiss.
I once saw Gene Simmons. I was at a hockey game in LA, and he showed up with Shannon Tweed, and they were sitting a few seats ahead of me, and it's just like you cannot wear a wig like that? Like, how rich? How rich is he? And he's got a block of wood that he's chiseled and painted hair color, and he's now balancing on his head like that's how he carries things.
I'm not sure it's a wig. I think he's got, obviously he's got grey hair or white hair, and he's just dyes it jet black. And I think because your hair quality changes when it goes grey, and so you can just, like Alice Cooper dyes his hair, obviously.
Yeah.
And
no, Nick, if you'd seen this live, you know what real hair is, and you know what real hair is.
But when you dye grey hair black, A, it looks unnaturally black, and yeah. B, it has a weird quality to it because it's not like
it's like a thicker, the grey hair is a kind of thicker.
It's like, it's got like a pubic
element to it. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, exactly.
I think maybe he might have had a transplant, and that may explain why.
I mean,
why he's got pubic hair on the top of his head.
He's got luscious long pubes.
He's combing them up around.
Yeah, it's just. But there's something just really, and then I think Paul Stanley wears a wig.
Yes.
But they all wear wigs on stage. Oh God, it's just. I like my favorite Kiss album is the Ace Frehley solo album.
When they did the four. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that.
Oh, it's great, and it's got New York Groove on it, and that's a banger.
Yeah, I think Destroyer for me.
I like is
everybody's favorite one.
I like Beth as well.
I love Beth.
Which is Peter Criss.
Yeah, that's yeah. Mm. Is that on his I think solo that's, one?
Is that on his solo album or is it on another album? I don't know. But have you seen the film?
What?
Phantom in the Park.
Oh.
It's Kiss versus the Phantom in the Park. It's fucking... And
it's saying about this the other week.
Yeah, it's like... It's just really... It's like Scooby-Doo. It's like really... It's like a Hanna-Barbera feature film starring Kiss.
It sounds great.
Live action, where Gene Simmons is a fire-breathing monster, and then all of a sudden it cuts to a swimming pool, and Peter Criss is sat by the swimming pool, and he just sings Beth. He sings his ballad. And then they go and fight a bit... there you go. Beth is from Destroyer.
Don't they shoot, like, rockets out of their guitars? Like, it goes like cartoon. It goes like...
Yeah, but with the worst special effects and no budget. And I love that film. I really like 70s Kiss, and I think that they turned into just.
Own army, they became little generals.
Well, I've got the four solo albums, haven't I?
And
they all come with a quarter of a poster, so. So, like, they're like big jigsaw puzzle pieces, and they all fold out, and they come with sort of like you fill in the form to join the Kiss Army, and each one of them has kind of like you can get an Ace Frehley necklace, you can get a Paul Stanley necklace, but you have to buy the album to get that thing. They were so the best selling one was the Ace Frehley one. And I was in America. I told you this, did I? Did I say it on the radio?
I can't remember if you said it on the radio or if you said it.
I was in America and I went into, I was in New York and I went into a record store, like a second-hand record store. And the only one that they didn't have was the Ace Frehley one because it sold so many copies. So you can get all the others for like $10. And Ace Frehley, you've got to like pay like $80 for.
Well, do you know, one of the problems Kiss, I think, ran into, why they... the one Kiss album everybody had was Dynasty, because that's when they went disco and you could get it for $1. And you go, oh, I like Kiss. Why is this one on for the back when, you know, the budget barrel was...
Is that the one when they're wearing suits on the cover?
No, that's Dressed to Kill. No, this is I Was Made for Loving You, Baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. That's my karaoke song. Like, I love that song.
it's good now in retrospect, and I think we're all a bit more sensitive.
It divided the fans.
Oh, well, it's a terrible album.
But it's a great song.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard songs from The Elder?
Oh, is that the new one?
Gene Simmons did basically a concept album in like the early 80s, and it's basically all about like I used one of the tracks on my short film that I made. It's basically taking, it's like a hero's journey, and each song is kind of like about a young boy that goes on a magical quest to meet the elders, and it's just fucking insane. It's quite boring, but there are some really good songs on it, and basically they never mention it. we did this Sword and Sandals fantasy epic concept album that we never mention. We just don't talk about
Her
that.
Majesty's Satanic Service. Remember the Stones concept album?
It's basically Sgt. Pepper on a budget.
Yeah, Comes in Colors, great song. One of their best, I feel.
I don't know what this is. What's this?
They let Charlie Watts write an album that was supposed to be the competition for Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club.
But it's kind of like a rip. It's like a ripoff as well. It's like weird that they sort of do it such. Like, it's like, well, let's make them all look a bit like the Sgt. Pepper Beatles and things. It's like, but why are you doing something completely different?
It's very Charlie, you can do anything. I'll copy that.
Yeah,
thing
I'll copy that, this thing that's really popular at the minute.
the artwork rips him off.
Is that like all
but the
actual kind of
songs don't sound like him? What do you mean? The songs rip them off.
No, not well. Like, it's sort of like an answer to almost like Sgt. Pepper, but it's like, it's because that's big. It's like, well, let's do. It's like they've gone, let's try and do that. Yeah. But it is like the look and every the kind
but
of the
even,
whole.
Even like, but in your mind's eye, listen to Comes in Colors, and you can see that's got a bit of the sort of pomp and circumstance of
what's it called?
Majesty's Satanic Service or something.
Yes, their Satanic Majesty's. Yeah, Rolling Stones, that one.
Which one? The Rolling Stones Satanic Majesties. I've never heard of this.
It's like a sort of 60s album that's like, it's like a sort of psychedelic-y.
Oh my god! That is fucking insane! Oh my god! Has he got a fucking sitar? Oh my god!
Is that Winston Churchill in the
tableau? That's insane.
But it's like the year after Sergeant Pepper. It's like they've gone, but it's like they never really chased them. But then it's just a bit where they go, oh yeah, I guess we need to get on this Sgt. Pepper bandwagon. But it's just why? It's
like,
it's
they
such
just
a
thought
weird,
that like, every album was going to be like, that's the way music is.
Yeah,
now.
That's how it is now, I guess.
That's really crazy. Because it was Pet Sounds and Sgt. Pepper that were like the two big ones that were, you know, poor Brian Wilson. I mean, he made Pet Sounds, and he goes, "I've done it. It's my masterpiece." Yeah. Oh, Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, that was, yeah, because it was To Rubber Soul, wasn't it? He initially came out, and he went, "We're gonna top this." And then it's like, how do you like that? It's like, oh, we've just done this one. We've just done this Sgt. Pepper. We're going to have.
Well, that's nice, Brian. I've just finished off my own album, actually. fucking hell. Yeah, but that's what drove him mad, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things. One of the things, probably.
Well, that was the other thing I wanted to say about tidbits that you find in rock biographies, because Neil Young's one, Shaky, is an absolutely fantastic
Neil
read.
Young wrote a biography for Shaken Stevens.
Yes. Yeah. He is one of his
biggest fans.
Neil Young, Neil Young is
got
the foremost
the
expert on Shaken Stevens. And anytime Shaken Stevens is in the news for another one of his plots to take over the government, they have Neil Young on. He sings Ohio.
I never want to find out this isn't true.
You never guess what Neil Young said. He's doing research at the moment at the Stevens Family Archives.
He's been he's been following Stevens for three seasons now.
Shaking Stevens.
In the book Shaky, Neil Young admitted to and will not back down. Neil Young gave his Harley Davidson to Charlie Manson. Neil Young, and that's the thing, nobody ever admits to knowing Manson, but Manson, like, and that's what reminded me with the Beach Boys. He lived in Dennis Wilson's house with
They all did, like, that's it. It just feels like, I guess they've all got to distance themselves, but it is like, they might as well all just say, well, I did, because, I mean, at the time we didn't know he was like...
Neil Young just said, he was an interesting guy, wasn't he?
Well, so was Dennis the drummer?
Yes.
So he's the one that basically stole Charlie Manson's song, wasn't he?
Well, that's what that's the thing that's said. I think Charlie Manson says he stole it. I don't know how much truth there is to he actually did it.
So I was doing...
If Charlie Manson says it happened, it happened. That, he was an honest guy.
I was pitching, you know, they do those Sky Arts Presents, what are they called? They're called Urban...
Oh, I know the things. Yes.
Urban Myths. So I was pitching an urban myth, and as research, one of them was the time that which Wilson brother was it?
Dennis
Wilson. It was the time that Dennis Wilson stole a song off of Charles Manson, and so basically you've got to make them funny, and they've got these funny situations, and you go, okay, so there's Charlie Manson, and he was writing songs with the Beach Boys, and you know, and then the more research you do, you go, there's absolutely nothing funny about this. It's so tragic. Everything was tragic about it. Charlie Manson was awful, and then Dennis Wilson had like a breakdown, and he was turned to a recluse, and it's just everything was tragic about it. You go, I'm going to find something else then. I'm going to keep looking. But really horrible.
But that's the thing. Charles Manson was much more in the LA lifestyle than anybody wanted to ever admit. But you know, and the Manson family had ever changing characters. Like there was a lot of people that were in the Manson family that left before it got weird.
Yeah, and
one very famous lady's daughter was in the Angela Lansbury's
That's
daughter.
That's just exactly what I was about to say.
Was in the Manson family.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see that whodunit.
Yeah, it's like, there's so much in that.
That was the whole lifestyle, wasn't it? I know from like reading Alice Cooper biographies and stuff like that, that they all were sleeping on each other's floors. So the Doors were around, and Alice Cooper were around, and there was, you know, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention and all of that lot. They were all in each other's pockets.
Yeah.
They were just waiting to break through.
And the Monkees played a huge role in that. Everybody thinks of the Monkees as like this just sort of joke band, but no, the Monkees were right in the mix of all of that.
Mm.
When you watch the film Head next to the Monkees TV series, I mean, they're just completely different experiences. Jack Nicholson wrote Head.
Yeah.
Did
he? Yeah.
Yeah. During his LSD weekend.
But it is all, yeah, they're all part of that scene. I mean, they're all there. And I think a lot of it's much more honest to say, yeah, I knew Charlie Manson. It doesn't mean.
Well, of course,
doesn't mean you murdered someone.
He would have been at all of their. He would have been at all of their parties because he was desperate to be
famous. Yeah, desperate to be famous.
And if you know, it's not. If you befriended him after the murders, I would say that would be like what. But you can't challenge somebody. To go well. Couldn't you see? Well, nobody could have seen it. There, they would have gone and got him.
Yeah. Yeah. They go, yeah, he's a pretty wacky guy. It's like, so's Tiny Tim, or someone who's probably about as well. You go, that guy's mad. It's like, probably, you know.
Yeah. Apparently, Tiny Tim, though, was an amazing performer. Like, unbelievable.
No,
he
yeah.
Could rap the room better than Johnny Rotten. Like just everybody was into it.
I think that, like, I find all that stuff, like, we kind of get the canon, don't we, of 60s music. Whereas there's a lot more of it that feels like, well, that's really interesting. That thing I played before, Biff Rose, was like a guy who was like a sort of 60s kind of hippie guy. But the music he was kind of doing was kind of quite croonery. But it was that. But that was kind of hip at the time as well. So he wasn't doing something that was kind of like wacky or way out. It's only when you look back on it where it's like, why is he doing that kind of thing? It's like he's like a cool guy, but he's not doing what you consider to be kind of part of the kind of rock music canon. So he's not really... Yeah. Seen as part of it, but what's all the stuff going on at that time is really interesting as like a whole. It's just we almost choose to be a bit myopic about what we think is proper music and what's part of the canon of stuff we listen to.
I think that's what's interesting about biographies, is that especially from a certain era, they all fill in gaps from each other. So you learn more about
Ozzy
Osbourne from the Motley Crue book.
Yes.
And Alex Cooper can't remember writing three albums, and one of those albums is one of my favourite albums. And when it gets to him talking about that, he just goes, yeah, I don't remember that. And then you go, oh, come on. So you've got to read Dick Wagner's book about him being a guitarist, a session guitarist, to find out that anecdote about when he and Alice Cooper were in Aspen writing this album. It's like a patchwork, and you kind of like...
Yeah, you do. You get a sort of overall idea of it.
And like with The Dirt, obviously, they hung out... Nikki Sixx hung out with Slash
and so you get that, and then you get Slash's book, and then it kind of like fills in
Slash thought he was going to go to jail because Nikki Sixx OD'd. And this was before Slash was in GNR. He was just like, it might have just joined GNR, but yeah.
Have you seen The Dirt?
Haven't seen it. Do you know, I read it, and this may go a long way in telling you why I can't remember parts of my life, but I didn't think it was that, like, I was like, well, yeah. It's not that bad. But you get your expectations. Like, you learn a lot about somebody, like, this is the most debauched thing. And I was like, at chapter 11, I was like, well, they better be keeping it to the end because it's not the most debauched thing I've ever heard.
It's pretty debauched. Like, the bit when they're fucking idiots as well. The bit when they've all cheated on their girlfriends, so they stick their dicks in egg burritos so to cover up the smell of women's vaginas. And you go, just use water. Just wash. Isn't what you're fucking, you know, it's just like, oh, it's just got an egg burrito. Can you imagine? Fucking hell. Oh my god.
Yeah.
We've been cheating on our girlfriends all night, so now we're gonna fucking stick our dicks.
Well, how are you gonna explain that? Like, why is your dick smell like an egg burrito?
I fucked an egg burrito. What of it? All the guys did it. We're in a rock and roll band.
That's hard to explain. Yeah. Just wash, you fucking. Fucking hell. Yeah.
Okay, you're on the couch, and no, I don't want any breakfast.
Yeah. But you're right. It's not too debauched. You're right, Glenn. We're in an unfortunate situation where I haven't played your song yet, and I'm really desperate to play Pet Sematary. But I'll listen to Pet Sematary on the way home. I'll play your song on the way out.
All right.
So,
should we do a quiz?
No, do we need to?
I forgot to even bring this band up. What song is it?
Which song?
Your song.
All right.
Oh, is it Tragically Hip?
Yeah.
Three Pistols, Tragically Hip.
Sorry, I didn't even bring it up, but that's a wonderful book too. It just came out about Tragically Hip.
I don't know a lot about the band, actually.
You do?
I don't.
Well, there's a book out.
Okay. News just in. Michael Caine was introduced to Manson by Mama Cass. He called him a scruffy little man. It's a fun fact. And Tommy Thayer is pronounced Thayer. Thayer, that's a bad name.
Yeah.
I like the idea that Michael Caine is like, I met Charles Manson once. God, what was he like? Scruffy. It's like, that's not the worst thing he's done. Yeah. Like, he's a bit like, oh, I wasn't that smart.
Scruffy little man. Oh.
So, well, that's the least of it, isn't it?
Scuffed shoes.
That's the thing, though. Don't you find, though, whenever you saw, like, the like, interviews and the footage of Charlie Manson when he was, like, locked up and he had a swastika scratched into his head? Yeah. Yeah, you just think, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Put a tie on.
Well, do you know, and this may be why I don't find The Dirt that there used to be a party in Desert Valley that Doug Stanhope would host in a little town called Panamint Springs. It was just basically a hotel, and I went there a few years, and it was really fun and really debauched. And one of the waitresses always wore a bandana, and I never thought anything of it until years later. And they said that's because she's got a swastika carved in her head because she was in the Manson family and one of the ones that was there.
One of the big ones. One of the regulars. So,
what do you mean? One of the ones that were there.
Well, a lot of them are there.
The ones on trial, at least. I don't know if she was there, but the ones who have swastikas in their heads were they.
You've got the main sort of family, then you've got like other people that are kind of satellite people.
What's this Quentin Tarantino film going to be?
Yeah.
Like?
Well, I mean, Charles Manson wasn't there.
No, I mean he was a manipulator.
Mm. Do we know that? Maybe the women were the manipulators and he's just this little scruffy
guy. He's just a bit scruffy.
He's a little simple and he doesn't like telling on people. Sure. Charles did it.
Yeah.
That's the new all-girl remake of the Manson family. Turns out the ladies did it.
He was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Just went along with
just
it.
Just misunderstood.
Yeah.
Because
Michael Caine really hung him out to dry.
I'm not going to go down there.
I was just about to say, you can do it.
Nah, I'm not going to do it.
It's not live. Yeah, don't even put it on tape.
Not even going to go there.
It's nice that you ever think about it, though.
Hmm. See, and that's what the new comedy has done. We've had to stop and think. And
well, the swastika backwards is the sign for Buddhism. Isn't it? So when you're carving a swastika on your forehead in the mirror, you might be thinking, this is a very Buddhist statement that I'm making, only to find out that it was backwards.
He was a nice Buddhist guy. Trying to do his like chanting. And
but then you bring people to the mirror and go, this might be offensive, but come look in the mirror with me. See? It's fine.
Good old Charlie.
Charlie Manson. Good old Charlie Manson.
Little Matt. Oh, right. Bryan Cranston met Charles Manson.
What?
How old Bryan Cranston? Bryan Cranston
met Charles Manson on his way to town.
That's the
beginning of a little.
How old's Bryan Cranston?
Bryan Cranston, what? Trumpo? He's Trumbo. Trumbo is pretty old. Bryan Cranston met Charles Manson. He said he was a little man with crazy eyes.
Hey.
He tweeted, "Hearing Charles Manson is dead. I'm reading this blind, right?"
Yeah, let me tell you what you're going to
say. Bryan Cranston tweeted this. So Bryan Cranston, the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, he tweeted, "Hearing Charles Manson is dead, I shuddered. I was within his grasp just 1 year before he committed brutal murder in 1969. Luck was with me when a cousin and I went horseback riding at the Span Ranch and saw the little man with crazy eyes, whom the other hippies called Charlie."
Mm. Well,
I don't know if that was worth reading out.
And that arguably is not a year before they were committing murders, because they don't know what went on at Spawn Ranch, and they do think that those weren't the first murders that they did.
Yeah. I know next to nothing about all of this. My knowledge of Charlie Manson ended with him getting a song he wrote next by the Beach Boys. And we've got to play the game.
Okay.
We've run out of time, Glenn.
Oh, okay.
It's been amazing to have you.
Yeah,
it's been great.
Just to recap, your tour is on at the moment, and it finishes on the 28th of April, and you're going everywhere.
I've been everywhere. This was poorly timed.
What is the date? It's
the 10th of April.
Yeah, right. We're near the end of April.
Yeah.
Right.
The Asian leg starts in June. If I don't know if anybody's in Asia listening right now.
This is an international podcast.
Excellent. Well, you should have told me. I would have done it in Japanese.
Well, you started with French. I mean, you've done very well.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Okay,
so,
this is a game, Glenn.
I'll play the song. Right, what is the music? Where is it? Girls load 3.
Okay, so this is a game. It's called Better or Worse, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse based entirely on my own opinions. So starting off with Julie Andrews, is Ennio Morricone better or worse than Julie Andrews?
Who's Ennio Morricone?
Did the music for Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Oh, yeah, he's better.
He's better, yeah, he's better. Joaquin Phoenix, that's fan club. Is Joaquin Phoenix better or worse?
Star of the Woker coming up.
Is he better or worse than Ennio Morricone?
Worse.
He's worse, yeah. Is Christian Bale better or worse than Joaquin Phoenix?
Worse.
Oh, yeah, he's better.
I think he's worse. Meryl Streep.
Machinist, don't.
Better or worse than Christian Bale?
Meryl Streep.
Worse.
Better.
No.
Better.
No, I heard. It's
come on,
Harvey Henry
Weinstein.
Cavill, better
Harvey
or worse.
Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein.
Henry Cavill, better or worse than Meryl Streep?
Oh.
Worse.
Worse.
I don't know who he is.
He's a guy who's Superman. Tony Curtis, better or worse than Henry Cavill?
Better.
Better. Toni Collette, better or worse than Tony Curtis?
Better.
Better,
yeah. Armie Hammer, better or worse than Toni Collette?
Better, and he's better than everything.
I like him a lot. I think
delicious
he might be worse than Toni Collette, but I do like
Armie
him.
Armie Hammer, I would say,
he's pretty good.
Hasn't done Muriel's Wedding, does he?
Five!
Five. So you got a score of 5. This means that you're not as good as John Niven, Sean Harris with 10, Daniel Cook, Daniel Lawrence, Taylor, Michael Legg, Solomon Craig, Rebecca Staten with 9, Claudia Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner, Evelyn Knott, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Shorex, Mark Smith, Carl Theobald with 8, Hayley Campbell, Brett Goldstein, Tom Goodman Hill, Charlie Higson, Matthew Holness, Jim Husking, Laura Lex, Esther Smith, Ian Smith, Elliot Speller, Gillett, Josh Whittacombe, Sean McLaughlin with 7, John Quinn, Solomon Graham, Taylor, Glenn, Hannah George, Colin Hall, Andy Kindler, Merritt Larwood, Lucy Porter, John Robbins, Richard outstanding, Mark Simmons and David Trent with 6. But you are as good as Yasmin Akram, Rob Deering, Tom Meaton and Joey Page with 5. And you are better than Jack Barry, Bunny Galore, Taylor Glenn with 4. And Sam Ashurst with 3.
So I'd just like to add, before this goes any further, Meryl Streep's nickname for Harvey Weinstein was God.
God?
Oh.
Yes. They used to be very intertwined, and that's why I don't like Meryl Streep.
Okay. What a note to end the episode.
They play out with yourself.
Yeah. So do you want to say anything about this song that you've got?
Yeah, it was about it's my favorite band from Canada, and I was going to talk about their biography.
Well, you ran out of time. Good night.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.